The Second Amendment is one of the most divisive issues in American society today, and while hysteria about gun rights may win elections or drive lobbying campaigns, it does not move us any closer to dealing with gun violence. In fact, the stalemate between left and right often prevents us from grappling with the fundamental issues surrounding the right to bear arms. How is it possible to reconcile the individual right to own and use guns with the right of the American public to live in safety from gun violence? New York Times editor Craig Whitney and former foreign correspondent looks at those issues in his book, Living with Guns, A Liberal's Case for the Second Amendment. It is published by Public Affairs. Craig Whitney, welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
What brought you to this point of making a case for the Second Amendment?
Well, it occurred to me when I looked at the history of the Second Amendment and joined the NRA after I retired so I could understand a little more about their thinking, that a lot of their opposition to any kind of gun control, that is, any kind of law that might make it safer to for us to have all these guns around, might be lessened, their opposition, if they realized that we on the gun control side recognize that the right to keep and bear arms is an individual right, and it's anchored in the Constitution by the Second Amendment. I think a lot of their NRA's opposition to any kind of gun control comes from their belief that what liberals really want to do is confiscate everybody's guns, as has been proposed a couple of times in the past in the 60s. And that belief, they encourage that belief in their membership, and it encourages contributions, money contributions, and paranoia, basically, among gun owners about what the gun control side really wants to do.
You state that one of the reasons for the book is to have people think, encourage people to think about our gun violence problem in new ways. What are some of the ways that we should be thinking about this problem?
Well, I think, among other things, we should recognize that gun control alone is never going to control gun violence, because it isn't guns that kill people, as the NRA always says. It's people who kill people. How do you get at the behaviors that lead to fatal assaults by people wielding guns? Part of it is, I think, you need to work with groups in the population who are prone to use guns in violent neighborhoods, in troubled parts of different cities in particular, to convince them that there are better ways of settling disputes or defending honor than going for an illegal gun. Part of it, I think, is tightening up the existing laws that we do have to, for instance, make it mandatory for buyers of weapons from private owners at gun shows or anywhere else, online or whatever, to first get their names checked by the National Instant Background Check System. You have to do that if you buy a gun from a dealer. And the aim of that is to make sure that criminals, people who are drug addicts or convicted of crimes or adjudicated mentally ill, don't get a hold of guns. As it is, about 40% of all gun sales are conducted privately, and they don't go through this system. So those are just a couple of ways.
When you look at the Second Amendment, and you write about this in the book, but why do you think the Second Amendment looks to guarantee an individual right to bear arms?
Well, if you look at the language of it and the history of its of the debates that led to it, what happened was, first of all, in the colonies, right from the start, Jamestown and Massachusetts Bay, people had the right to have guns and needed them for hunting and to defend themselves against attack by Native Americans. We had some pretty horrendous Indian wars right through into the 18th century. The Second Amendment came about because after the Revolutionary War, which again was won by a people who knew their way around firearms, we wouldn't have had the United States if people in the United States weren't able to use firearms to such effect. They wanted to establish a stronger federal government than the Articles of Confederation had, but there were fears that this new strong federal government could become too powerful, tyrannical even. And so the Bill of Rights, it ended up as the Bill of Rights, and the Second Amendment is part of that, were all measures designed to assure people that the states would be able to continue to have powers that the federal government couldn't just disregard or overrun. And one of those powers was the ability to keep militias. So it was a political move, basically, the Second Amendment, to make sure the states were able to keep their militias even after the federal government was established, and that they wouldn't be overrun by a standing federal army, which was the fear they had, some of them, right after the Revolutionary War.
You talk about in the book a lot about the evolution of guns in America, but you make a point, and I think it's a really interesting one, that it really wasn't until the early 19th century when we started to think of the Second Amendment as being there to help us with our self-defense, of defending ourselves.
Right. Well, as I said, in the early colonial days, of course, people did need guns often for self-defense, but the fight to get the Second Amendment written and established in the Constitution was not about self-defense. It was, about the state right to keep their militias. That doesn't mean that the Second Amendment doesn't recognize the individual right to self-defense.
Right. Indirectly,
it does. But that didn't become a real issue until the 19th century, and then it receded for a while until after the violence and the social turbulence and racial turbulence of the 60s, the fear of rising crime, and crime rates did soar in the 60s and 70s, led again to a concern that firearms would be useful for self-defense.
Where do you think that the NRA and other gun rights supporters have gone wrong in their message? Is it that continuation over the need to protect ourselves?
Well, yes, I think they keep exaggerating the crime rate. For instance, crime rates have fallen a lot in the last couple of decades in most places throughout the country, and the NRA keeps highlighting crime rates and assaults as if we were still back in the 70s. And, you know, the crime rate fell because the crack epidemic of that period waned. That's not to say that violent crime rates can't rise again, but we do not live in a completely lawless country. And the NRA disregards that, I think, in partly just so that more people will join it and acquire firearms.
When you look at gun control advocates in this country and their message, as you mentioned, you believe that the NRA is right when they say that guns don't kill people, people do. So what do you do about that problem?
Well, you look for ways to ensure that the laws we have are enforced so that people who shouldn't have guns, and everybody agrees shouldn't have guns, like criminals and former drug addicts and other categories like that, can't acquire them as easily as they can now by subventing state and local laws. That's one way. Another way is to look at how education and social measures can help convince people who might be tempted to use firearms as weapons of assault that this is a bad idea. Both President Obama and Mitt Romney in their last presidential debate did touch on this. They both agreed that better education for all levels of the population would help in dealing with our gun violence problem. But I think people need to sit back, stop panicking. We're not living in the midst of a huge national crime wave, but we do have a gun violence problem. How can we all agree on ways to make it safer for us all to live with so many guns?
As this issue evolves and as gun policy evolves, where are we right now in the laws that we are passing?
Well, right now, I don't think that the issue of gun control or gun laws, gun violence, played much of a role in the recent presidential election. But a lot of states have passed laws which, in my opinion, are irrational and crazy. Stand Your Ground and Castle Doctrine laws, a lot of it at the instigation of the IRA, encourage people who feel they might come under attack or they're facing imminent bodily harm to basically shoot first, not to try to get away from the danger before they, in desperation, resort to a firearm if they have one. I think the danger of the NRA's approach is that it encourages people to think that if you own a gun, you're a law unto yourself, and that's not how things work. It's not how we built the United States, and it's not a recipe for a smoothly functioning civilization.
Do you think we'll ever come to some agreement, or will there always be rumbles and always be a fight one way or the other?
It's an issue on which feelings are strong on both sides. I think what we really need to do is stop acting as though we were in a panic. For gun control advocates to concede and make clear that they believe, that they agree that the right to keep and bear firearms is guaranteed by the Second Amendment. So not to encourage the gun owners to think that what the gun control side really wants is to confiscate everybody's firearms. I think one thing the NRA side has in its memory is something I'd forgotten until I came across newspaper clippings about it, but there was a commission, a national commission, which in 1969 did advocate basically outlawing handguns and seizing all 28 million, I think there were, of them at the time, that were in private hands. Only the police should have handguns. That recommendation never went anywhere. The Nixon administration came in and wasn't interested in pursuing that. But, you know, memories of things like this can easily stir up fears that that's what gun control advocates really still want today. And I think if they took that argument away from the gun-owning side, it would be easier to talk about possible practical measures that could be taken to reduce the very real problem of gun violence, in particular in our cities.
I think that's one of the optimistic things about the book is, as you point out, there is common ground.
Well, if you look for it, there is. And there are reasonable people. I found Stephen Sanetti, who is the head of the National Shooting Sports Federation, which is basically the firearms industry's trade group. You can have a reasonable conversation with him. I don't know if you could have a reasonable conversation with Wayne LaPierre. I asked him for one, but he didn't respond. Wayne LaPierre is the executive vice president of the NRA.
Well, the name of the book is Living with Guns, A Liberal's Case for the Second Amendment. The book is published by Public Affairs. Craig Whitney, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for spending time with us. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, Living with Guns, A Liberal's Case for the Second Amendment. It's published by Public Affairs. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.